and you are listening to Co-op Radio FM 102.7. And this is Collect Perspectives, and this is part of the broadcast Against Borders for let's not have a world full of fence builders putting up barriers between each other's. That's not a way to go. And we have guests here, Mandeep from No One Is Illegal.
Hi.
Hello, hello. And Mike, who is also working with SIPO and No One Is Illegal.
How's it going?
Thank you very much for coming on the show and doing the groundwork for such an important issue and getting this out there. So this is the lead up for I liked what MTS said there. Dare I say the national event for raises the question. But this isn't a debate about Canadian sovereignty. This show, that can be next week. In across Canada, immigration always being there in the background, simmering away for various reasons, and status in one form or another since the inception of the country has always been a hot topic, whether to allow the French or the Métis or voting rights for natives or the head tax on other people who were non-white. And it's always been a struggle and a push for equality here, putting aside the obvious around native rights. This has largely been a nation built by white people for white people and to protect their privilege. So although I'm a white person myself, it's one of those things you can't, if the score is uneven when you start the game, it's just not a fair game. So it's what needs to be done is to level the playing field. So Mandeep, you want to give a little background on how this whole status for all, this current campaign came about? What was the instigation and what's been going on lately?
Sure. So the march in Vancouver anyway is being organized by Status Coalition, which is a coalition of immigrant-based sort of community groups covering lots of different communities like Latino, Middle Eastern, South Asian, Black, Chinese. I'm probably forgetting some, so forgive me. But this coalition came about quite a while ago, like over, I guess, a year and a half ago now. And we've been sort of putting on different activities every once in a while, and the idea for the march on the 27th, this Saturday, sort of came out about like from conversations with people across the country. And as you mentioned, there's marches happening in 8 different cities actually on Saturday, and so with some discussion there, brought back to the coalition, and everyone was pretty excited with everything that's been going on in the United States. It's been great inspiration for people in this country to take to the streets. And yeah, I mean, one of our major points that we work on want to get out there is this idea of status, and also, you know, even larger, like justice and dignity for all immigrants and refugees. But status is definitely huge because it talks about the most vulnerable people in migrant communities for sure. And of course, the Status Coalition does work from a perspective of solidarity with Indigenous brothers and sisters who are also fighting for self-determination, for sovereignty, and recognizing that status has been used against Indigenous peoples forever to you know, either reward or punish them for whatever they do to stand up for their rights, and the same way it's used against people of color migrating. So.
And Mike, do you want to give a little background on SIPO and some of the work that they've been doing, how this relates?
Absolutely. SIPO is it's an organization that was founded from the south of Mexico in the state of Oaxaca. The translation is, it stands for the Popular Indigenous Council of Oaxaca. And Oaxaca is a state in Mexico with a huge diversity of indigenous cultures, and the SIPO was born out of the necessity for those cultures to form together and to formulate a system of power and resistance to a government that essentially was and still is trying to write them out of the state of Mexico. The idea of the SIPO collective in Vancouver is something that was born out of Raul Gatica getting his refugee status at the beginning of the year, and during this process we came together as a group of students from UBC, a group of local activists, and a couple of people from Mexico as well. Came together with the idea that this is someone who is fighting for refugee status from particular political repressions in the south of Mexico, and we shouldn't allow him to have to go back and fight and defend himself for and his way of living, his people's way of living, against a very oppressive paramilitary and military system in Mexico. So the idea was, we would raise money for his legal fees, for his status, and that was where the SIPO in Vancouver was born. What it's become is a solidarity group for Oaxaca, but it goes a little bit further than that. It's created a really incredible community here in relationship to the Status Coalition, in relation to other solidarity groups from Latin America, and also we've been really focusing lately in our last fundraiser on focusing at breaking down the borders between activism and academia. So we've been working together with UBC and trying to do that.
So. Excellent. Well, I just want to throw a few numbers. Feel free to correct me if you have some other numbers. About, just to get a picture here, these are 2004 numbers. A 250,000 people were accepted into Canada as permanent residents, and that's kind of it. So it's a rising number, obviously, and it's not always been the same type. And just to put that in perspective, about 60% of those were from economic class, including applicant family members. 43% consisted of people under compassionate humanitarian categories, and about 26%, a quarter, are refugees. So just to kind of clarify that, you know, obviously people coming from Oaxaca have a different experience than people who are currently immigrating from China. This is a complex issue and involves people from all over the world. So there's exactly, for every person there could be a different reason. And the types of immigrants coming to Canada have obviously changed, which has obviously shaped Canada's policy. As long as it was largely from the UK and from Europe, the gates were open. And then when the gates started to, you know, there's lots of Chinese, that's when the new rulings came out. So these are some numbers from 2002, starting from the most numerous country, just to give you country people who are immigrating here. China's number one, India, Pakistan, the Philippines, Iran, South Korea, Romania, kind of pops up there, seems funny, United States, Sri Lanka, and United Kingdom. So I guess, does that put the United States somewhere between Romania and Sri Lanka in world affairs, people wanting to flee countries? But that's for another show. So really, what if maybe you want to comment, Mandeep, on what has been some of the recent changes? Because you often hear about the point system in Canada, mm-hmm. and that things have changed. And I, you know, as I was just looking at some of the point system myself, yeah, I bet you many people who arrived here in the 60s, who in, you know, maybe you're listening in, your parents came at that time, you know, your parents probably wouldn't qualify. Maybe you wouldn't even qualify. Maybe you haven't finished high school properly. Maybe you don't have everything. You can go look it up and see. It's a pretty stringent, you know, like they've, to get 67 points is what you need. And, you know, even having a PhD only gets you 25. So you really need to have a bunch of your, you know, enough money in the bank, a good education, a place to go, family member. You need to have these networks now. So how did the current immigration, what's changed in the last few years, and what is it that's holding up?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if you look back to the history of immigration to Canada, it's, as you said, certain people were welcome, and it's very clearly along race lines, and there were certain, you know, the Chinese Exclusion Act and the continuous journey rule and very, like, race, like, line-based exclusions. And now you look at it, and like you said, it's more sort of along economic lines, but again, if you look at the majority of people who are going to be rejected along those lines, then it's very clear that it's still very much about race and where people are coming from. The point system, like you said, is incredibly discriminatory. It's quite economic, and then that fits into this whole picture of why does Canada even want immigrants to come here? And they say it openly, like to them, it doesn't feel like saying something racist, but I mean, I've heard, you know, in the past government just a couple of months ago, Pierre Pettigrew saying that, well, Canada's going to need more and more immigrants to help build this great infrastructure that we want to put place into this country, but we should be able to sort of say where they're immigrating to within Canada, and we should be able to accept the people whose skills and labor that we need. And so it's very obvious why immigration actually even exists. And the point system, again, like very much on economic lines, education, language, those kind of things. And especially for women, it's hugely discriminatory, because if you think about women and the places that they're coming from, then they're the ones who are not going to be having access to these things that they would need to garner these points to sort of come over here as quote unquote legal immigrants. So, I mean, I think it is very much along economic lines, but it still has very much to do with race, because certain people definitely are welcome. And money is obviously welcome because, again, you know, you can be an investor if you can show that you can invest millions of dollars into the Canadian economy somehow and come over here. But obviously other people aren't. And when refugees get here, again, like, they're totally impoverished by the system, right? Like, not only refugees, but people are sponsored by in-family class sponsorships, where now one of the big issues for some of our, like, communities is that when they then have to... when the person sponsored then cannot meet their financial obligations to the government, it rests on the person who sponsored them to pay this money back to the government. So just huge issues sort of all over the place. And when you put them all together, you just see how taxing this system is on immigrants and refugees. And whereas we're supposed to be the people who freeload off the system. So kind of something doesn't make sense there.
Well, that's a lot of, yeah. The playing to the underclass fears that they will be, you know, that their problems are not... you know, the governments that they're created from now. So that's mm-hmm. always the easy blame. But it seemed that even for the Canadian state, this is not a working system, where you have people who, if they're, you know, if they want the doctors and you're injured, give us your doctors, your lawyers, mm-hmm. your graphic designers, keep your farmers and everything else back home. But it's not that clear, because you have people who come here who are trained, who can't work, mm-hmm. and end up, they're either a doctor, but they end up a taxi driver.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not that useful to the Canadian system, mm-hmm. or, you know, I mean, if you want to put it in economic terms for there, you think it'd be much more beneficial. We have a shortage of doctors, that he'd be making much more money, he'd be contributing, he'd be building this infrastructure, there'd be a bigger tax base, all this kind of stuff. So it doesn't even seem to be working from the perspective of, like, the government.
Mm-hmm.
And the case of where, okay, well, you have... so give us your Mexican farmers, your migrant workers, to subsidize basically, an unsustainable industry, the agribusiness in its current form, you know, heavily on fuel. Those kind of things are going to be affected, and even then they make it very difficult. So they kind of punishment. There's been some work. Both of you involved somehow with the migrant workers from Mexico. Do you want to talk a little bit about what's been going on with workers coming up here, and particularly in BC?
Sure. So the SEWP, which is a seasonal agricultural workers program, has been in place in Ontario at least since, I think, 1966, so a couple of decades now. In BC, it was just implemented last year, from what I can remember. And last year, I think about 700 Mexican farm workers came through to BC through that program. And this year, I think they're estimating about 1,000 plus workers that will be coming through this program. And what this program does is that it's negotiated between the Canadian and the Mexican governments, and then if a Canadian farm here sort of applies and shows that they've tried to look for Canadian workers and they haven't been able to get them, then they can effectively apply through HRDC to try to get these workers to come up. The Mexican government there sort of puts out these ads and screens workers. And so once they're here, they have this contract that's supposed to last 8 months. The contract stipulates certain things, but it's quite loose, quite open to interpretation, quite open to lots of abuses. And the biggest thing to recognize about the program, like all temporary sort of guest worker programs, is that these people have no status in this country. And therefore, any complaints, as, you know, we've seen with a recent example, is met with this immediate threat of repatriation back to the country that they're coming from. And so they're quite silenced. They exist outside of usual labor laws. The program exists out of usual labor standards. And so they're supposed to get a minimum wage here of $8.60, but there's certain weeks when they'll work, you know, 2 hours one day, or whatever, depending on the weather or the employer. So like, some weeks they're hardly making enough. A lot of them are sending this money back to Mexico to help out their families, which is why they're here in the first place. And some weeks they're not even making enough to do that and cover their expenses. They don't have access to MSP in BC, which is the health coverage, so they have to pay RBC private insurance. And then a lot of times the employers refuse to take them to doctors when they get ill or injured on the work site, and just lots of stuff like that. Like recently at this farm, Golden Eagles, that now there's going to be a campaign around, workers were being forced to stand outside in the rain and eat their meals. There wasn't enough drinking water on site. There weren't enough bathrooms. Last year at one of the farms, 50 workers were being forced to pay rent and all live in one house. So it's just absolutely like subhuman conditions that they're working in. And some of the workers have said, like last year, they were like, our conditions of working in Mexico were better than this, so we just want to go back. Like, it's just absolutely disgusting. So
and these are some of the things that recently the UN was because Canada's being under review, which is a normal process, not a special one. It gets reviewed every so many years as being part of the strike. And we actually failed. You know, we're sort of pointed out that these are some of the things that have been, we were actually worse off than we have been in the past. That besides Aboriginal poverty and poor water and other factors, that working conditions in Canada have slid down the slopes. And obviously this is tied in, because it's not, you can't just sort of isolate one group of people and say, well, this is, you know, it's a special case. When you talk about status, obviously if there's a migrant worker who's going to do the job for $5 an hour, and I say, well, I'm going to do it, but, you know, I'm like, I need to work for $12 an hour to be a living wage, who's going to get hired there? If he's like, well, looks like, you know. So these are definitely, this is not an issue for those people. You know, it's like, they're just stealing our jobs. I mean, it's like, it really, if they're going to be here anyways. Like, this is the fact of the world is that people have always moved around the planet. And that it's strange to think that in many ways, back in the ancient times, you know, something to think, we actually had some more rights. That was one of the inalienable rights of all humans, of freedom of movement anywhere on the planet. And the passport was created to restrict movement in the Roman Empire, because they had these, you know, the Vandals and problems and rebels from the outworlds, and let's keep them out there. And it was really about keeping people in the right place. That's the purpose of status, is control. And so, I mean, really right now, well, that's what's going on. Why? And you have to look, why is it in Oaxaca? Why is it people are coming from these other countries? It's not just because, you know, Canada's got a great PR agency and we have great commercials running on in foreign countries. You know, I'm sure the PR, you know, like, they'd like to think
it does
that
exist.
Of course. But, you know, a lot of these things is that the refugees has to do with war. And there's a prime example. Canada is involved in these foreign wars as well. Or is, you know, complicit with other nations, you know, by supplying and working with those other nations who are involved in that. And, you know, instead of addressing the issue in that local area, we tend to ignore it. Well, it's over there. So, but inevitably, those people are like, well, you know, I've heard that it's good where you are. When I was in Morocco, everyone, the place to be was like, Valhalla was to get to Quebec, this, like, French-speaking part of Canada where they could, you know, they could make it. And they were all, you know, everyone wanted to be there. And in many cases, these types of ideas, these are out there, that, and they've been perpetuated almost kind of in part by Canada, almost falsely sort of being like, if you arrive here, you'll get this job and we're this golden opportunity. And then they arrive here and it's not at all like that. Mm-hmm. It's totally the opposite. It's poor working conditions and poverty. So what is some of the demands for this campaign around status? What do you think, either of you, if you want to jump in, what do you think could be positive ways forward to improve the situation?
Well, I think, first of all, what we really have to think about, specifically in such a recently created program of guest workers in British Columbia, is looking at what is going to accompany the program, the AHRDC program. We have to look at the wage being accompanied by access to health care, access to clean water, and those being the provisions that are clearly laid out to people who are in Mexico deciding whether or not they want to make the trip up to Canada. This is very, very incredibly important, I think, because if that doesn't exist, then it's essentially Canada as a nation, as a government, false advertising to people and requesting less than our minimum wage, people to come and to work for less than our minimum wage. And I think that really is, for me, a very, very critical point, is really clearly laying out, okay, are you going to have access to health care? Are you going to have clean water? Are you going to have food? What are the conditions like? That's
Around the status campaign, I guess, that was developed over the last couple of years across Canada, there are 12 demands or principles of regularization. And I'm not going to go through them because I think people can look them up and I'll just bore you. But a lot of them, you know, exist to sort of get rid of these hugely discriminatory things in the regularization process, so that, you know, regularization should not be contingent upon how much money you have, your political background, you know, whether you're quote-unquote an economic refugee versus someone who suffered quote-unquote real political repression, like all those things, all those conceptions, criminality, you know, there shouldn't be this double punishment where people who have, right now, you know, people who have found of like major crimes have this, you know, you're not allowed getting status in a country like Canada, where we know that a lot of people who are involved in quote-unquote now what's considered terrorism in a lot of places where they're coming from are in actual, like, you know, struggles for freedom and self-determination. And so there's this double punishment concept that exists, and so on and so forth. So there are 12 principles of regularization that are out as part of the general sort of status campaign as demands. So those are quite important. And I think for temporary workers, I mean, if you look at what's going on in the United States right now, they've had a long experience in the States as well with guest worker programs and the braceros that came up from Mexico decades ago. And people now in their current sort of campaign with all the bills that are being put forth is they're saying no guest worker programs, you know, like we recognize that as a complete means of exploitation. And I think it's important to realize that in Canada, this guest workers program, then there's the live-in caregiver program, which is also sort of similar, that exists, that people are just like, well, it's kind of, you know, it's normal and it's sort of part of the background and that's fine. And I think for the workers who are here, absolutely grant them the ability to get status in Canada rather than being sent. There's some workers in Ontario who have been, because of coming back after season, who have effectively lived in Canada for like years with a few months gaps, you know, in between, and who have no ability to get status in this country. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. And like you were saying, I think this concept of human rights exists and the Human Rights Charter and all that, but really things are, you know, set out by citizenship rights in this day and age. So unless you're able to get status, there's really not much you can do in terms of, I think, getting your other rights. So for the workers that are here, that would be the thing. And then, yeah, I mean, guest worker programs, I think, should ultimately not exist because, yeah, anyway, they do create sort of a super exploitable class of people.
Well, you can have a library of policy, but actions always speak louder than words. And we're going to cut away, and I think you touched on terrorism there, and that's another whole part. So let's discuss that. Let's play a track by Mutamasik, who's an Egyptian-born American, and who ironically enough, this CD was seized by the Egyptian border guards, because she didn't have her papers in order. So, but here's a track called Immigrants on Course. we're back. That was Mutamastic with the track Immigrants on Course from her Definitive Works CD, and one of my favorite underrated artists out there, if you're a fan of Asian dub and Muslim Gauze or DJ Rupture, all in the same boat there on tour together. So, but I still have yet to get the Philistine Burn It CD. And for those of you who might be interested, July 15th, Philistine will be back in Seattle playing at Lo-Fi. So you look it up on the website and find out where that is. And we're back. And we've been talking about Status for All and immigration in Canada. And this is part of the national campaign of a day of action in Vancouver, Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, Halifax, Fredericton, Peterborough, and more. And here in Vancouver, there will be a demonstration starting at the Vancouver Art Gallery on the Robson side, gathering at 2 p.m. So maybe you want to fill us in. There's some other buses and some other details.
Yeah. So just to facilitate people who don't live in the in Vancouver proper to get into the march, there's two buses. One is coming in from Surrey, and you can catch that one at you should be there around 12 because it's leaving at 12:30 from the Kwantlen College parking lot, which is at the corner of 72nd and Scott Road. And for others, there's another bus that's coming in from the Petro-Canada parking lot at the corner of Fraser and South Marine Drive, and that one's leaving at 1 p.m., so you should be there around 12:30 to catch that one. So yeah, hopefully lots of people will come out, because it's a historic day. So, you know, you gotta, and we're doing it in solidarity with the stuff happening in the States, so if you come out on Saturday, try to wear white. We're trying to coordinate that, and we'll see how well it goes.
So for all the anarchists, just forget.
That's right. No black.
you wear your black shoes, maybe. Wear like a white sash or a white t-shirt. So there
something
you go.
White.
Well, you just mentioned on there, this in the United States, obviously immigration being a big hot topic button. Numbers, everything down there, tenfold. So the numbers we're looking at in Canada, you know, I said 250,000. I'm taking a random guess. Must be 10 times that for the United States. Mm-hmm. So a couple million people a year trying to get in. Mm-hmm. And probably similar, you know, quarter of that. I probably bet you it's less. They probably accepted less refugees, but I'm don't know much about the United States on that particular numbers. But there has been talk about harmonization with the United States, and this besides putting Gordon O'Connor's recent signing away very quietly our connection with NORTHCOM in an emergency, which is that's another show regarding our military and security status. Immigration is obviously a fortress North America. So maybe you want to talk about where in the world have been some of the hot spots and what else has been going on. I mean, obviously Fortress Europe is another, you know, sort of catchphrase out there. There's been a lot going on. No one is illegal. Obviously, Kindmast is illegal. In Germany, lots of border actions. See, there's Romania there bringing back. And as the Russians collapsed, they moved around. And, you know, people making the jump. When I visited Morocco and I was in Tangier, it was really obvious. The cops showed up and all of a sudden the streets emptied out and the cops would disappear and then it would be all these people. And the reason for that was they were mostly illegals trying to flee into Europe, and that was the closest point. If you could get to the Straits of Gibraltar, it was a 30-kilometer boat ride. So there's lots of places in the world where this is, you know, Canada has a different immigration because you have to take a really long boat ride, as in, you know, people taking the horror stories of being trapped in a shipping container for up to months and then arriving in Vancouver only to be found by immigration officials. That would very much suck. Let alone being shot at running across the Mexican border. So there's these border zones, you know, they're not as crazy as the Korean DMZ, you know, it's so harsh. But there's obviously these spots are of huge contention. So maybe either if you want to jump in and just whatever, what's been going on? What's happening with borders these days? What's been developing?
Well, I think, to put it simply, there's been an increase in flow of goods across borders. Well, at the same time, there's been a restriction for certain people to be able to cross borders, and it seems to be one of the greatest paradoxes, to me at least, in the world that goods and services in a lot of ways with the guest worker programs can move freely across borders, whereas people, embodied human beings, can't, depending on issues, you know, like race and all that kind of thing. If you look at the North American, including Mexico, perspective, one of the big things that grasps me is this idea of security certificates jumping up in Canada. If you look particularly, the security certificates were issued under the Immigration and Refugee Act, revised in November 1st, 2001, whereby the government can deport or indefinitely detain a foreign national on the grounds of them being a threat to national security. And talking about the idea of terrorism interspersed with national security, we have to seriously think about our relationship to countries such as the States in this regard. In Canada, once this certificate is signed by the Minister of Public Safety and the Emergency Preparedness Minister and Minister of Citizenship and Immigration Canada, the certificate is sent to a federal justice. But in this review process by the federal justice, the actual person who is in question is not allowed to be present, nor is their attorney. So this to me seems a lot in line with what's happening in the States in terms of denial of due process. It seems as though Canada is on the federal court level is opening up the precedent to fall more in line with the States in terms of giving people on the grounds of national security risks, giving them the disability to have due process, which is a fundamental principle of our legal justice system. So I think we have to be very conscious right now, specifically in Canada, because there haven't been nearly as many certificates issued as similar programs in the States. We have to be very conscious of the legal precedent that this is setting for the future. And we have to be very aware of it and very vocal about how we as Canadians see this.
Well, having papers is one thing, and if you have a Canadian or an American passport or a EU passport, but what happens if you don't have status?
Well, I mean, the life of someone who's non-status is being detainable at any moment, a given moment in their life, being deportable at any given moment, and you know, you don't access sort of anything to do with security or anything like that. For women, hugely precarious because of not being able to access services when they're inflicted, you know, there's violence inflicted against them, because you're in constant fear of any sort of interaction with authorities leading to you being reported as being someone without status and being detained and deported. So I think it's a constant life of fear, from what I can understand, not being non-status myself. And yeah, constant intimidation. And I think it's just, you're asking about what the current state of borders is. And I think the whole state of immigration process is like this constant low intensity warfare almost, where it's just constantly psychological and constantly like instilling fear, where you're trying to limit people's movement, not only by knowing that there's border guards, but just knowing that, you know, you can't interface with the system at all ever, because at any point you're seen as the enemy, you're seen as someone who shouldn't be here just because you don't have papers. So it's incredible. And I think talking about security stuff, which I think immigration is meshing, you know, more and more and more with, especially since September 11th and the integration with the United States, is recognizing that, you know, there are 5 men held under security certificates, but we know that across Canada there's probably in the thousands more who are for prolonged periods of time detained under quote-unquote national security reasons or security reasons, which is this new part of immigration process, without, you know, any reason. And, you know, the reason, sole reason is given is that we can't give you a reason because it's an issue of national security. And I mean, we know people who are not only detained in detention centers, so immigration detention centers, but actual, like, in prisons. So, and recently, you know, the Millhaven prison was created in Ontario for the security certificate detainees. It's just, it's just absolutely horrendous. And I think the integration with the United States will continue. There was a recent, the Security and Prosperity Act, which Canada has signed itself to along with the States and Mexico, which was ratified again just a couple of months ago, which again, you know, Canada said, well, we're committed to meshing our, not only our economic sort of, whatever activities, but as well the security activities, which go hand in hand with that. And so this Fortress North America, they're aiming to have it all completed, they say, by 2008, which will just include more sort of border integration, again making it easier. If you look at the Canadian government website in terms of border stuff, there's all sorts of programs to make it easier for preferred sort of customers to, you know, ease their the times that they have to wait at the border and the security checks and all of that, whereas making it harder and harder for other people to cross those borders. So it's just I just see it as, you know, going through to complete like sort of police state kind of stuff. So,
and well, not very high profile out west. Word had it that back east, the immigration went to a mall. Do you know the details mm-hmm. of that particular?
Yeah, so that was, I guess, about a month and a half ago now. It's kind of time has been flying. But yeah, there's been a lot of really recently disturbing things happening in the Toronto area. So one was this where checks were being done in Dufferin Mall in Toronto, and also in the communities are largely Latino and Portuguese. And I wouldn't say that this is completely out of keeping with immigration practice, because it actually, every once in a while, they do sort of step up their activities, and I guess they have certain quotas in that. And they do know that there's lots of people from those communities working in the construction industry there who have overstayed their work visas and such, and so are quote-unquote illegal. So a lot of people from that community were rounded up and sent back or detained and that. And then just recently there was a story that came out of immigration going, or the CBSA going to a school, an elementary school, and picking up two kids of a family there, and basically telling the kids, you're never going to come back to school again. And this was a way of them, and they've done it before, of picking up kids and detaining them so that the parents, obviously, you know, of not wanting to be separated from their children or having no other means, coming out of being underground and reporting themselves. So they were going to deport them immediately, and from what I understand, the recent thing is that they are going to allow the children to finish their school year, how nice of them, and then after that they told the family that they should have their travel documents, which means their ticket back to, I believe it was Costa Rica, in place so that they can be deported once the school year is over. So yeah, just lots of really disturbing things. And actually I was about to say what's his face, but that's probably not very polite. But the Minister of Security, Stockwell Day, who's right around the corner from Vancouver, actually, you know, after all the heat went on about this from the media, said, "Oh, actually, this is not a usual CBSA process, and we shouldn't be going into schools and whatnot." But obviously, you know, the intimidation and that there's the precedent has been set. So, you know, parents obviously aren't going to feel secure sending their children to school either. So,
but even if they backpedal a little bit, that doesn't necessarily show good faith
exactly.
on their part. It's kind of like, oh, I see. That's where your line is.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the Canadian public won't tolerate.
That,
exactly.
That's okay. So yeah. We can quietly send people back to deport. I mean, this is you know, all over the world. There's been cases. The Sans Papier movement in mm-hmm. France was huge years ago, and you know, this is happening all over the G8. This isn't something that's just happening in Canada or the United States. It's just been recently in North America, as we try and close at the borders, and the Americans flail about in a last desperation to maintain their empire. So it really seems like, you know, this kind of the building of walls is encouraged, not just in physical means, it's also in a psychological of, you know, keeping people isolated is the easiest way to keep them, you know, from everyone who is the part of the underclass, which is like the bottom 80-90% of the world, from, you know, rising up and putting an end to it. Because, you know, it seems like a pretty common you know, thought these days, that obviously the government, you know, in politics in general, isn't really doing much for the common person, and you know, that politicians can't be trusted, and the system itself isn't working, and its response is really to tighten ranks, and lately, and this is most obvious in the, you know, the terrible idea by the United States to build a giant wall. I mean, can you get any more obvious of their intent? You want to talk a little about what was going on in southern United States, Mexico?
It's absolutely. It's one of the greatest ironies to me that as the states are building more walls and militarizing their border more, and now sending 6,000 troops to the border in the southern states, that you're not seeing the percentages and the numbers, the pure raw numbers of people going down who are trying to cross the border. So that says to me that there's a fundamental root problem that's causing something, this migration to happen, and this idea of putting a wall down is a band-aid solution that isn't working now. It hasn't worked for a very, very long time, if ever. And it's really questionable if it's ever going to work. So that to me says, wait a second, let's step back for a second and let's think about this critically. Let's think about what we're really going for here. Are we trying to, with our economic policies, in NAFTA, for example, are we trying to force people from, say, communities in southern Mexico who don't have a means to live because their land has been expropriated and sold to agribusiness from the States or from Canada or from Europe or wherever. Let's really think about what's causing these issues and driving people from their communities, as opposed to just putting a wall up and assuming that that is going to fix the problem.
Well, someone else forwarded this to me, talking about, you know, this is also very telling. If you want citizenship, you know, you can get denied. If you refugee status, I don't think you were shot at enough, or, you know, things were quite as bad as, you know, you say they were, so you can go back there. But it's always been that case. The French Legion was the first to start this, where if you wanted French citizenship, all you had to do was pick up a gun. And if they say shoot them, then you go, okay, yes, sir, and then there you go. And here they are naturalizing people at Camp Anaconda. Just recently, more than 200 soldiers, sailors, and Marines during the naturalization ceremonies in Iraq. And these are people who were not American citizens, who probably wouldn't qualify under their immigration laws any other way, but they're willing to become private first class and fight for the U.S. at a time when they need soldiers, need to fight on their side. So there you go. That's as simple as that. And I can't actually believe it's happening to me. I feel so proud to obtain my U.S. citizenship on my own, a combat medic in Iraq. So there you go. And that to me is telling, you know, why who are they giving it to and why. And so it definitely does seem, and of course this is always comes back to why are people coming here in the first place? This is the exploitation abroad that's creating the indifference and the inequality, where people, I mean, why stay? If you're, here's this prime example. I can't help but, mention this is not really an immigration issue, but stood out as being mind-blowing in the Valley de San Felix in Chile, where a Canadian company, Barrick Gold, wants to blow up the glacier.
This is phenomenal.
And then make two giant holes and then dig everything out that they want and then fill it up with the other side and then move the glacier over a little bit. So, of course, everyone in that valley, I mean, that's it. That's one that's coming up ahead. So if you're an environmentalist, you know, this is something to get on, check that out. But this is what, you know, many cases in the Philippines, Placer Dome poisoned the entire river. Mm-hmm. So here you are in your homeland, you know, I'm working away, I'm sustaining myself, I have no intention of moving to Canada, I'm happy over here, and then, oh, there's no fish, everything's dead, everything's poisoned. What are you going to do? I mean, if you can't stay where you are,
you move.
So that's the right. I mean, and what's changed? You know, in the past, it's always been: are you a political refugee, or are you a economic refugee? Mm-hmm. And really, there's a third class which hasn't been touched on much today: is an environmental refugee. Mm-hmm. And especially with the hurricane season increasing, you know, there might be more and more people who will be fleeing wherever they were because it's completely leveled. It's just flattened, or it's just you can't farm there, you can't live there, you have no money to rebuild. So where are you going to go but the safe place? And of course, Vancouver seems like a safe place. I mean, that's the image we're selling everywhere. So why wouldn't they believe what the image? So this really, that's the underlying problem here. And then it becomes this kind of two-faced system where, you know, Exactly. We need to address the root problems. Creating a tighter immigration or a varied, you know, work permits for some and then status for some, but then, you can stay for so long, but then if the war subsides and you really got to go back and this type of, it creates a multi-tiered system of human rights, which is not fair. I mean, it also undermines normal Canadians' passport, their rights, because it creates a situation exactly like where you set precedents as well. We're doing it because of terrorism case, so we need to hold them because you never know with those Saudi Arabians, they might be terrorists. And then what's the step to say, I've seen you at an anarchist meeting. You've been down at the anarchist bookstore. I think anarchists are still bomb throwers. I think we should round up all the anarchists. Mm-hmm. So really, this is not something that's just an issue that's important, I think, to people of color and migrant and communities and people who this really needs to be, taken on more by the mainstream, the left wing and other movements as critical, because if the rights get pushed aside for these people, there's nothing to say, the precedent's being set, then what's to say, they were not going to do it for the rest of us. On that note, we're almost out of time, so we should pull our events together. I'm going to play one more track, seeing we've been talking quite a bit. This is a Asian Dub Foundation with the track Roundup, is how appropriate.
When you hear them marching drum, you know they're gonna blot out the sun. When you hear them marching drum, you know say your time soon come. Hammer coming down fast, flag is flying full march. Shoot your ride from the blast, you know we won't be the last. It's a roundup,
it's a roundup,
it's a roundup,
it's a roundup.
Rifle butt through the door, then you kick through the floor. Headlines screaming for more, now you're a prisoner of war. In the roundup, it's a roundup. This is a countdown to the crackdown. Time to take a little trip downtown.
It's the roundup.
Get in the line up, there ain't no let up. This is a point of fight, government sticker.
In the roundup.
From the fit up, straight through the knock up. Through the touch up and the drug up, through the rough up. It's just a start up, so watch your speed up. It ain't enough to just put up and shut up. This is a roundup. Never mind at the end of the tether, charges coupled together, the senses is forever. It's a roundup.
It's a roundup.
Stone floor for a bed with a hood in the head. Helicopters overhead, maybe I'm already dead. It's a roundup. This is a roundup.
When you hear them marching drum, you know they're gonna blot out the sun. When you hear them marching drum, you know I say your time soon come. Your time soon come. Your time soon come. You say nothing. They come for Muslims. You say nothing. They come for anti-globalists. You say nothing. They come for liberals. You say nothing. They come for you. And who will speak for you? Who will speak for you?
This is a countdown to the crackdown. Time to take a little trip downtown.
It's the roundup.
Get in the line. This is a bona fide government sticker. From the fit up, straight through the knock up. Through the touch up and the drug up, through the rough up. It's just a start up, so watch your speed up. It ain't enough to just put up and shut up. This is a round up.
When you hear the marching drum, you know they're gonna blot out the sun. When you hear the marching drum, you know I said your time soon come.
Asian Dub Foundation off their latest album, Tank Roundup. Very soothing song. And, well, we're just about out of time. It's 5 minutes to discussion is up next. And thank you very much, Mike and Mandeep, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And let's give out the details one more time for the action on Saturday.
Sure. It's a National Day of Action for Status for All, Justice and Dignity for Immigrant Rights. The one in Vancouver is going to be starting off at the Vancouver Art Gallery on the Robson side at 2 p.m. If people are coming in from out of town, if you're coming in from Surrey, you can catch a free bus that's leaving from 72nd and Scott Road. That's the parking lot of Kwantlen College. And that's leaving at 12:30 p.m. So please be there by 12. And if you're coming from the south side of the city, there's a bus leaving from the corner of Fraser and Southwest Marine Drive, which is a parking lot of a Petro-Can, I believe, and that's leaving at 1 p.m., so be there by 12:30. For elders, there's going to be transport during the march if you can't walk the whole way, and please wear white if you can. That's it.
And this is being part of Broadcast Against Borders, which was initiated by CKUT in Montreal. And if you want to go online, you can find out there are many more interviews and downloadable audio. You can listen to interviews with people from involved in different movements and refugees and hear their words and their situation. And of course, there'll be more updates, and this will be up online at some point later in the week if you would like to have a listen again to the show. And that's pretty much it. Thank you for listening in. Next week, we'll be back. And depending on how things go in Six Nations, we'll likely be back on Native Rights here in BC for this unceded territory we're broadcasting from here in downtown Vancouver. So thanks again, both, for coming. And please check out the, if you want to find more details, in solidarityacrossborders.org, or you can type in No One Is Illegal Vancouver, and come down, check it out, the event, and get involved. So hope to see you in the street. Here's a little MIA to get you going.
We got God down, we got you. Every day thinking about how we get through. Everything I own is on IOU. But I'm here bringing y'all something new. You don't like the people, then they like you. Then they're gonna set it off with the big boo. Son in the battle, it's a son and daughter too. What you wanna talk about? Who done who? What you wanna talk about? Slang time, that's that MIA thing. I got the bombs to make you blow. I got the beats to make you bang. Slang time, that's that MIA thing. I got the bombs to make you blow. I got the beats to make you bang. Pull out the people, pull out the poor. 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 Pull out the poor, pull out the poor. I'm a fighter, fighter God. I'm a soldier on that road. I'm a fighter, nice, nice fighter. I'm a soldier on that road. Bring me the reaper, bring me the lawyer. I'm a fighter, take them on. You treat me like a killer.
I got the beats to make it slang tang. That's that MIA thing.
bang. I got the bombs to make you blow. I got the beats to make you bang, bang, bang. Slang, tang, that's that M.I.A. thang. I got the bombs to make you blow. I got the beats to make you bang.